This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Illinois 12th District Representative Mike Bost. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Congressman Mike Bost next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 490 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Congress is soon back on the Hill with a long list of challenging issues before the end of the fiscal year. Illinois 12th District Representative Mike Bost recognizes the challenges and the implications for his rural district.
We have 12 budget bills that have to pass, and then you've got something that's so big to our district, and that's the farm bill. Each one of them has to deal with the fact that you're trying to coordinate some group of people on the right, and you're trying to coordinate some group of people on the left to come up with enough votes to pass something that when we send it to the Senate, will continue to pass to the president's desk. If it doesn't, it will at least drive us to a conference committee where we can come to some sort of agreement. So, you know, earlier last week, I was with the chairman, G.T. Thompson, traveling throughout the district, talking to farmers about that particular issue. It was just some great input. When I tell you the amount of people that came out to each one of those meetings was a lot, because they know how vitally and important it is. But it is, and the chairman himself said that he believes that we will get out of the House, didn't say done, but out of the House, the farm bill by the end of September, which is when it's due. But a more important thing that he did say was, he said that, but we also know that, yes, we have to have it because the language runs out on October 1st, but if we are delayed, we're not in any real problem until a couple months down the road when certain things start kicking in, and he will guarantee that we'll be able to figure out a way to do an extension so that we can actually at least operate under the existing farm bill.
There appear to be plenty of headwinds towards seeing this policy done, and I'll just ask from your perspective, is the Freedom Caucus one that would step in here and could derail plans, albeit that from the chairman's party?
That's a possibility, and let me explain that. And let me tell you that I agree with a lot of the policies that Freedom Caucus pushes forward. But I'm not willing to shut the world down knowing that we need 218 votes. However, my hope is how far do we go on the work requirements on the SNAP side? And if we have, because we have a president that has an agreement with the speaker because of an earlier situation, that there were we work requirements in there, that he's agreed to those work requirements. If they don't ask for more above and beyond those work requirements, then yes, they will come on board with us. But there's going to be some that will never come on board. They just don't believe in a farm bill.
Former Congressman Colin Peterson suggests to the chairman, you don't need to negotiate with the Freedom Caucus. They may not vote for the farm bill anyway. Move to the other side of the aisle and look for compromise there to come up with the votes. That's what I meant about the partisanship,
sure,
because there appears to be a left and a right, but where's the middle that brings a policy to fruition?
Well, and I don't know if because I don't know how we get enough of the left, but maybe we can, since the president has agreed to the work requirements, that we can then move forward and say, we're asking for your vote. The president that you support, the president of your that was elected by your party, is in agreement with these work requirements. So maybe that gives us the leverage to bring Democrats over. But if all of a sudden they want to remove the work requirements, that means we lose a whole lot more on the Republican side. So then how many do you go on the other side? Because, you know, it's always the argument between the safety net for our farmers and the SNAP programs and nutrition programs. You know, certain people, that there's no doubt that the nutrition program is vitally important, and I'll be the first to say that. But the work requirements we're talking about are not anything that the average person on the street doesn't look at and go, well, yeah, that makes sense. So we'll see how it goes.
So looking ahead inside the bill, there would be a number of agriculture groups that would say, given the cost of inputs, it's probably time to spend more money on farm policy.
Right.
But that doesn't appear to be in the cards at this
point. No, it doesn't.
So how do you deal with base acres, and how do you deal with reference prices?
Well, this is an argument that we've heard all over my district. And as we're moving forward, whenever we've got the whole Republican side as a whole saying, don't spend more money here, don't spend more money here, don't spend more money here. The question is, GT told me this himself, the chairman. He said, I am turning over every rock to find out what program might exist, not only in the farm bill, but anywhere that we can actually say, okay, this is a program that we're going to get rid of so that we'll have the funding to do exactly what you're talking about.
It's challenging to see a reference price as a farmer, from a farmer perspective, to see a reference price that is below the cost of production.
Yeah. How do you do that? No other business person would be asked to do that. You've got to be able to sell your product for a profit, or otherwise there's no reason to be in the business. And you're right. We are at that point that security net needs to be. We can't go through, if we don't have a farm bill and we don't have this in place and take into consideration what you just said, we will go right back into what we saw with more gray hair on our heads happen in the 70s and the 80s. And we can't afford that.
Will this bill have a sustainability aspect beyond conservation?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Look, we are not rewriting the farm bill. We're adding to and making it better, right? And as far as the conservation side, and that being able to make sure a farmer can still make a profit, trying to also put things in there that allow for the development of other markets, these are all in the different titles, and we have to make sure that farmers feel secure with this bill.
You have a lot of corn and soybeans in your district,
I
but
do.
You also have specialty crops.
Oh, yeah.
And do those specialty crop producers have the coverage that they need in this extreme climate events that we've been through?
Certain ones do and certain ones don't. And let me tell you, we had the same conversation of all things with, and people don't realize it, the largest amount of horseradish is produced in my district. We had this conversation specifically with where they need their help in case something would go bad. However, when they raise horseradish, it takes a very different climate situation that would cause them not to be able to produce, okay? So you have to talk to those to make sure there's a catch in there for them. And that's very difficult to write, because when you're in the Beltway, I'm telling you, there's not a lot of people know, including me, even though it's my district, about horseradish. So you got to go out and talk to the right people. So we're trying to put that in there for our specialty crops. And when you talk about my district, my district is probably one of the most diverse as far as crops in the United States. You got to realize, in the northern part of my district, I got row crops. But you get to my house, which is Murfreesboro, Carbondale area in Illinois, it rolls into rolling hills. You got peaches, and you got apples, which are affected by all kinds of things. You've got grapes. When you go along the river, just down from my house on the Mississippi, we grow rice. Then, if you go over to Wayne County and White County, there's melons. Then you go south into Alexander County, most southern county in the state of Illinois. For the first time since the 1940s, they're talking about planting cotton because of the cotton gin across into Missouri. So diverse that it is, we've got to know that security net is available for every one of those producers, not counting livestock, which needs a safety net too.
With regard to dairy, you have the perfect storm that's going on now. You have the federal milk marketing order that's going through hearings, and you have the farm bill. And the question is, does the solution come in two pieces of legislation and regulation, or is there time to roll this into one, into the bill?
The thing is, I think it comes in two pieces of legislation, but we've got to be able to have communication between the two so that one doesn't offset the other on some positives that we might be doing. And that is that's where we've got to work with staff and work with the producers to understand where we're at while drafting that language.
Is crop insurance whole, or are there elements that your producers are telling you should be tweaked about this risk management program?
Right now, they are okay. Majority of them are okay with crop insurance. But let me tell you, at the listening sessions, they gave several suggestions that the chairman wrote down that were things to adjust. One was whenever you were rating a field, not only on production, but on the estimate of what the value of that crop was. Okay, there's two different figures that they were asking to put in, and the chairman himself said, I don't think staff has even looked at that, and that was one thing that he wanted to take back, because it just allows for a more sensible calculation on what the crop is worth to make sure you can get the full amount.
So let's step to another area, and that one would be regulation. Waters of the U.S.
Oh boy.
Waters of the U.S. has been around for a long time. Right. And after a Supreme Court ruling, many thought that the administration would rewrite the rule. The administration said, we will amend the rule.
Right.
And there is word of how those amendments would take place. Is WOTUS over?
Oh, by no means. By no means. Look, they didn't follow the Supreme Court. It's almost like they're looking for the hardest line they can take and still get a court to rule in their favor. So if all of a sudden someone, which they will, appeals this one, then it goes back to the courts, and the courts say, no, you didn't get it right again, then they're going to tweak it again. And the thing is, they're just looking for a way to be the most aggressive government that they can possibly be, to the detriment of not only farmers, but other business people throughout this nation and individual persons and operating of their household. If anyone 40 years ago would have thought that the government overreach of what you do with water on your property that does not leave your property would ever be to this point, we would have never thought that the government would do this. And it is truly a case where bureaucracy continues to grow and EPA becomes not the agency that they were built to be, which is to protect our future, but an agency to override any sort of progress we might be able to make.
It seems interesting that we have a water law that controls land.
Exactly. And you and I, before we got on the air, we talked about the fact there's all the statements. I say, you know, they want to control every drop of water that drops from the air and runs off the brim of your hat. You said that another member, Frank Lucas, who we trust, we respect tremendously, says that it falls out of the sky until it goes to the ocean. And I don't know how you can do to that level and allow us to compete in world markets.
I know that you serve on the Biofuels Caucus.
Yep.
So out of the skillet and into the fire, how do you feel about the EPA's handling of renewable fuel, especially with relationship to RFS and RVOs?
Well, let me tell you that, first off, I'm on board with the year-round E15. I'm a big biofuel supporter. Let me tell you, there's all kinds of new technology, not only with biofuels as far as crop production is concerned, but also like capturing waste material and actual producing fuel out of that as well. Matter of fact, one of my colleagues is a dairy farmer in California, and he's got one of the largest methane capturing, and they use it to generate electricity to the neighboring business, and that business runs completely off the methane that they collect there. But when we're talking about the rule, the drawing back of this administration has been terrible. Let me tell you, we had enough trouble. And look, I'm a Republican through and through, and I think the last president's policies, but if you'll remember, we had arguments there, too, with that same issue and them not reaching that ability to allow that fuel production that needs to be made and the RFS rules and you know, they were basically granting waivers, or they were putting the waivers and made it difficult for a lot of my biofuel producers to feel secure about the markets that they have. And as soon as a business doesn't feel secure, there's a danger of losing them.
So you have a number of states that are taking action and moving toward next generation biofuels.
Right.
You have industry, airline industry, that seems to be very interested in next generation biofuels.
Right.
Yet the RVO numbers that came from EPA did not support growth in this area.
Which is why a couple months ago we actually had the EPA administrator before us, and I specifically, because he never mentioned in his report of renewable fuels, he never mentioned biofuels. And that doesn't make sense. I mean, as a matter of fact, I said that earlier last week in a meeting, and I said that it is a shame that we have the EPA itself, when talking about energy, it doesn't realize the potential of the best opportunity for renewable fuels we have, and that's under biofuels.
So former Congresswoman from Illinois, Sherry Bustos, stood behind the Next Generation Biofuels Act. It's still alive, as I understand, but does it have traction to move on its own? Does it need a vehicle to catch and to step in? Is it time for Congress to step in this particular area?
Yeah, you know what? I believe it would be, and the vehicle, would it be the Farm Bill? Where would it be that we would find that vehicle? It wouldn't pass as a standalone, but is it not something that we that agree with it can actually work on and try to find a spot for it where we can get it in on an amendment? And it would be ruled germane? Sure. We've got to keep looking.
So you mentioned the amendment process, and some would suggest that this 23 bill, assuming it's a 23 bill, would have an open amendment process, and when it comes to the floor, then there would be opportunity for all sorts of amendments.
There is, and let me explain that in great detail. Under this speaker, he has made it very, very clear that regular order is what we do. Now, that means that we'll have amendments in committee. Those can be raised up or down. Then we have to go to a rules committee. And then in rules committee, other amendments that can be floor amendments have to be approved that they are actually tied with the bill. The speaker has let that process work. So much so that some people wish it didn't work, that there was so many amendments that come along. But it also works that if that is not something that is germane, the rules committee can make that decision. There is going to be a lot of amendments. I believe that this process is going to be a very open process. It's going to be, you're going to see wonderful things try to be passed, and you're going to see terrible things try to be passed. But it is the process. I believe that calmer minds will prevail. And I believe and I trust in the process that if we allow the amendments to come forward, good ones will pass and bad ones will go by the wayside. I have to believe that because that's the option I've got.
So you sit on a committee that also looks at infrastructure. Is our electric grid today ready for the volume of electric vehicles that the administration is proposing?
No, we are not. And let me tell you why we are not. Because not only the federal government has made it difficult to use the best amount of fuel that we can use to feed that power grid, but states have as well. I come from a state that they have so devastated, and this is an issue that I was on the committee of the Public Utilities Committee for 20 years. I know that whenever I left, the state of Illinois was natural gas was 40-some% of the load. 27% was coal. Another fairly large percent was nukes. Well, the nukes are aging out, and the rules have stopped the other two. We don't have enough wind and solar to feed that grid with what we're doing now, let alone if all of a sudden we start producing all these cars that have to be charged everywhere. That has to be generated from somewhere. It has to be generated from somewhere. We also can't be giving up quality farmland for solar panels and continue to feed the world. We can't give up quality farmland and have the problems that come along with wind generation, and we're not thinking long term on when those solar panels start wearing out and those wind things start wearing out, how are we going to remove them and or replace them, because the companies are only making the investment on the front end. These are a lot of big issues that we're going to be dealing with the power grid.
Let's bring our conversation here to a close if we can. And this goes with rural development. And I'll start with broadband. Are we spending the money from Washington in an organized fashion to see the maximum benefit? And with regard to rural America, how are rural residents being challenged not only with broadband, but with health care and so many other areas that their city cousins don't enjoy?
Remember, I represent an area that has just that problem. Look, when we looked at the infrastructure bill, I know what infrastructure is. Unfortunately, the infrastructure bill we passed 2 years ago, only about 50% is actually what I would consider roads, bridges, rail, air, waterways, sewer lines, water lines, and that connectivity. That is, but instead, what we were just talking about, that power grid and everything like that, putting a grid down that will charge cars all over the place when our forefathers were wise enough that they actually, whenever a combustion engine came out, guess what? We didn't do. We didn't take tax dollars and create gas stations. Why? Because the private market did that. If we could take those monies, roll them over to that grid to make sure the connectivity happens, we can cure a whole lot of problems. The problems that we have with, okay, somebody's down and they can use telemedicine. Or right now, when Farm Progress Show was going on, the new equipment that was there works off of connectivity to be able to do the great farming job that is the conservation, that is the farm future. But we got to be able to be connected to the grid to do that.
I know that you lead Veterans Affairs.
I do.
And with regard to Veterans Affairs, some of the same people that stood for freedom live in rural America and now are sacrificing the health care benefits just because of their zip code.
Yeah, just because they don't have connectivity. We try to help that every way we can. You know, one thing that we've done is that we passed several years ago, but now we're doing our best to implement it, and that was the Mission Act. And the Mission Act is just this. It allows for, if you're not close to the VA, that you can still receive care from the provider down the street, and the VA will take care of that. So we're trying to get to that, but that also has the same thing with connectivity because so much of the rural area could benefit from telehealth. And we know it works. We went through a pandemic that we discovered all the good things we can use with telehealth. It's not everything, not a fix-all for everything, but it sure is an advantage to those people who might be living in the rural area.
Congressman, we want to thank you for taking
time to be
with us.
All right.
It's called Open Mic. I've asked all the questions so far, so now, sir, you get to close the program with an open mic.
All right. Well, let me tell you this. I'm blessed as a truck driver's son to be and serve in as many problems as we might have, the greatest nation in the world in Congress for that nation. Look, with all the problems you see on social media and all the 24-hour news networks, understand it's still the greatest nation in the world. And feel secure in that.
Our thanks to Illinois 12th District Representative Mike Bost, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.